Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
He is in a building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. In for John Chuckery on this Friday night. We'll be in the next couple of nights for John as John enjoys his vacation. I do not mean to impugn UPS, as in call them out, but I'm getting mixed messages. Girlfriend sent a package. Ironically enough, it was an Amazon package, but UPS picked up the shipping slack on it. Was supposed to get here Wednesday. Ended up not making it here. And it says it was in transit yesterday and today. And I've been back and forth with them trying to figure this out, and I get an email saying it's been delivered, but then I look on the actual tracking device of it and it says it's in transit and won't be here until Tuesday, when it was on track to be delivered on Wednesday. So I know that people are struggling when it comes to the stuff involving the Rona. I'm not going to call them out. I'm not going to be a Karen about it. I'm just letting you know that if you are somebody who has had a struggle when it comes to shipping, when it comes to the way things have gone since the world shut down, you are not alone. Trying to humanize things and let you realize, hey, you know what? These things happen to a radio host too. And the other part of this too is that they closed down their call center. So it's not like I can complain to anybody. I've been DMing back and forth on Twitter with the folks at UPS Help, which has been entertaining, to say the least. You know, I had to bring out, you know, my dad's Northeast temperament has to come out a little bit to be like, hey, guys, you know, it wasn't difficult. I don't even know what it is. Girlfriend assures me and says, it's not really that big a deal. It wasn't that supposed to be a big deal. And she's like, do you want me to tell you what it is? I don't know what it is. I couldn't tell you what it is. Who knows what it is? 404-741-0929. That is the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. About 20 minutes from right now, I'm going to tell you the space that MLB could have inhabited that they failed miserably to try and inherit by the back and forth belly aching that took place over the months of June and July over things that you and I, the fans, don't care about. Before we do that, let's talk some football with an NFL ground and pound. So I saw this last night, and I have to tell you, my initial thoughts weren't the thoughts that I have now, because while the message I agree with, I'm not necessarily sure I understand, you know, the reasoning behind it, because the part of this that I don't like is the effect that it has on other people. Malcolm Jenkins, of course, you know him very well. Defensive back in the National Football League. He's not exactly somebody who is not a household name. He's one of the prominent members of the secondary in Philadelphia. And because of that, you kind of pay attention when he speaks up. He's on CNN talking about things involving the coronavirus pandemic. And I found interesting what he had to say with regards to his temperature and kind of taking his temperature as far as him wanting to be a part of the return to play when it comes to football. Here's what he had to say on CNN last night with regards to returning to play because of the coronavirus.
The NBA is a lot different than the NFL because they can actually quarantine all of their players.
Apparently having some trouble getting the sound on him, but he basically said that football is a non-essential business. And that part I don't necessarily agree with when it comes to that, because there are a lot of people who look at the NFL as their livelihood that aren't players. And there's part of the fabric of a lot of people, you know, it's ticket takers, it's media relations people, it's the guys who are outside of the periphery, people you don't see. This is what he had to say last night on CNN.
The NBA is a lot different than the NFL because they can actually quarantine all of their players or whoever is going to participate, where we have over 2,000 players, even more coaches and staff. We can't do that. And so we'll end up being kind of on this trust system where the honor system, where we just have to hope that guys are social distancing and things like that. And that puts all of us at risk. Not only, you know, us as players and who's in the building, but when you go home to your families. You know, I have parents that I don't want to get sick. And I think until we get to the point where we have protocols in place and until we get to the place as a country where we feel safe doing it, we have to understand that football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. And so the risk, you know, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back. The NBA is a lot different than...
That's a little bit from Malcolm Jenkins. Look, I understand and I get it. I'm not saying it's number one, you know, you have to play, you know, suck it up and play. I'm not doing that. That's not what I'm saying here. But what I am saying is that there are a lot more people other than you that depend on you playing. And I'm not saying that even for me, you know. I mean, I don't want to sit here and try to cry foul, but, you know, a lot of our people in our business, when it comes to people who, you know, lost jobs or were furloughed or, you know, outside of, you know, this industry trying to make ends meet, they depend on you playing. Now, I understand the health risks involved, but it's not like we're not taking risks ourselves. And that's the part of it that I don't get. Like that's... Don't act like you're taking a risk that's different than the ones that I'm taking on a daily basis. And I'm doing all I can. You know, I wear a mask. I've been diligent. So that part of it is to me where it's like, okay, you know, I get the risk that you're taking, but don't make like we're not all taking the same risks. That's all I have to say with that. Here's Matt Ryan talking about the new helmets they might have to wear and why it might be problematic if they have to put those on, if the things involving, you know, the fogging up of the visors and things of that nature.
The sides of it would be tough. You know, for us, I mean, your peripheral vision is huge, particularly for, like, pass rush, you know.
Yeah.
Like, just feeling that flash on the side of you is huge for movement. So, the sides of it would...
That is Matt Ryan talking about the new helmets. They kind of look like a motorcycle helmet. I've seen some of them over there, and you know, they have a little bit of a breathing space there. I think they still have to kind of go back to the drawing board on some of those things from Rydell as far as that goes. But, you know, from an NFL standpoint, anything you can do to keep the players safe, that's certainly something you have to keep in mind. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's 100% true, like where it's 100%, you know, fail-safe. Like, this is not an easy thing. And there are people who are working countless hours, sleepless hours, to try and figure out, okay, how do we get this thing up off the ground and keep people safe? It's not easy. One of the things that we found out this week was the NFL Hall of Fame game, which traditionally kicks off the preseason, was scrapped. The Hall of Fame inductions also were scrapped. So think about 2021 when they go to Canton, if they're going to have a Hall of Fame class from this year and next year, that entire ceremony is going to take about 10 hours, depending on the speeches of some of the guys from this year. Not that they're not deserving of their moment, and I'm not trying to belittle that or say that that's not deserved. But what I am saying is that I don't think that it's a surprise that they take a game away that I know from the perspective of the Falcons, they didn't really want that game last year. Despite having the honor and the glory of being the first team seen on the field during the preseason, that's not exactly something that you want, an extra preseason game, an extra opportunity for your players to get hurt. And I've been saying this, I've been crowing this for years, the NFL preseason's a sham anyway. It's turned into that because so much of this is just the ability for the owners to get the extra two games of gate that they force on their season ticket holders. They force the season ticket holders to pay for that extra pair of games full freight, and you're not getting nearly the same kind of quality of game. Now, they don't want to take those away, but you might have to take them away, especially when you think about the fact that you're not even getting any freight from it because you're not having any fans. So, funny how something like that becomes more useless because of the fact you're not making any money off of it. See, that's the one thing about the NFL that I have preached about for years is that they don't keep something if they don't need it. If they absolutely need something, they'll keep it. And I'm going to talk about this a little bit later when it comes to evaluating the Atlanta Falcons, because you have to think about this from the perspective of the Falcons. They have a young core that they need to get more reps, and not mental reps, like actual reps on the field. You have rookies, a lot of which you want to be contributors to your football team for a team that was 7-9 last year. You have an environment of a head coach and a GM who are both coaching for their jobs this year, we think. And throw into that, oh, by the way, you don't have any OTAs. You don't have any mini camps. Team's not going to be able to basically have practices until the 28th of July. That, to me, is something that you look at and you say, oh, my goodness. That takes a different kind of spin on the way that I evaluate the season. Because you are starting behind the eight ball. Remember that year where they almost struck? And we had about 4 or 5 weeks of really bad football. It was the year after the uncapped year. And we had 4 or 5 weeks of really bad football, and it didn't really get until about middle part of October. And again, that's kind of been a trend that's followed over the course of the last couple of years because they've taken less and less contact out of practice and out of preseason. They do a lot less stuff full speed now at the NFL level during practice than they ever have. And because of that, it's had an effect on the gameplay over the early part of the season. So you might see a more pronounced effect on that from the Falcons early on in the season. And if you think about the Falcons' early schedule, it's not exactly a picnic. You got to go to Dallas. That's not exactly easy. And you got to play at Green Bay. I mean, that's a playoff team from a year ago. So in my mind, I almost wonder if that has an effect on the way you evaluate the team. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. As far as the league-wide, you know, we talked about the scrapping of the Hall of Fame game. Here's ESPN's Dan Graziano on the fact that we might not even have any preseason games.
I think there's an expectation around the league, at least the people I talk to, that the preseason will at least be short if that's the way they decide to go. Remember, nobody's been on a practice field. Everything's been virtual. So if they do get to training camp for the start on July 28th, the idea of having everybody in their practice facility just able to practice just against each other is going to be appealing, and teams may not want to, A, take breaks from those practices to go play preseason games or expose themselves to other teams who are coming out of their bubble.
That's Dan Graziano. He does believe, though, despite all the bluster about, you know, things that have continued over the course of the last couple of days and weeks, the NFL is still working under the assumption that they will start the regular season on time.
In terms of starting the regular season on time, the league is still optimistic that they'll be able to do that, and they're trying to confront the problem that's directly in front of them right now while also planning for that big issue down the road of how we get a season off the ground. You know, talking to league officials on a conference call after the owners finish their call, everyone still seems optimistic that they will be able to start the season on time in their regular stadiums. I don't get the sense that the cancellation of the Hall of Fame game is an alarm bell in terms of the potential for starting the regular season.
There are also still discussions on whether or not they're going to do something about the roster, possibly expanding the practice squad. They could possibly have a situation where they increase the transaction windows. Those are things that have been talked about between the NFL and the Players Association, but still nothing has been finalized with regards to that. There's also the talk about, you know, whether or not you use dome stadiums or not. There was obviously a report from Pro Football Talk that said, you know, open-air stadiums are probably the best when it comes to warding off the coronavirus, whether you have fans or not or what, because just the open-air variety. If you have a retractable roof like we have with the Benz, keeping that open is probably something that is more advantageous to doing as opposed to keeping it closed. But, you know, as far as the logistics involved when it comes to the NFL, and again, I sit here and say this with a full grain of salt. If you are kind of, you know, wanting to get away from the talk about the Rona, I'm with you. Like, the virus talk, to me, it gets exhausting. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm exhausted by the whole thing as well. I go to bed at night and I want to throw things when it comes to the virus. But it's unfortunately become the side effect of everything that we do right now. It's become so crazy when you think about what this has all been able to knock out, not just the stuff in the sports world, but stuff outside of it, and not limited to, of course, the people who were involved, who have gotten sick, who have died. Very unfortunate. I'm not going to say anything editorial about the way it was handled, but point is, we now have something on our hands where if we don't get this right, it could be very catastrophic when it comes to everything that you and I hold dear. And because of that, our continued compliance with what's happening in terms of, you know, wearing masks and things of that nature needs to happen first and foremost. 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with me, Willie P, on Twitter at Willie P Style. Coming up next, you had an opportunity. There was an opportunity there, but they blew it. Who? What? We'll explain next. Willie P is in the building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com, and as always, via the radio.com app on your smart speakers and smartphones. Willie P is in a building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Hope you're enjoying yourself. In for John Chuckery. 404-741-0929. Girlfriend and I just got done watching the show You on Netflix. Boy, if that's not the trippiest show I've ever seen in my entire life, I don't know what is. It's a great one to sit back with the lady friend and watch, though, because it really... it gets everything started, to put it in a PG fashion. It really is a nice fire starter, if you will. Good kindling. But man, the first season was bad. Like, not bad, but like the first season was bad in terms of how just twisted it was. And then, if you could possibly even imagine it getting even more twisted, it did in the second season. So that's one where it's like these kind of shorty type seasons that go like one at a time. That's because my whole thing on TV series is I don't like watching them right when they come out, because things get subjected to the hype machine, and I've been burned before. I just can't get into it when it comes to, you know, something that's right on the off the press. Like, oh, did you watch this? I'm like, no, I can't do it. I I don't know what it is. Like, I didn't watch Mad Men first run. I didn't watch Game of Thrones. I think it was about three quarters of the way through Sopranos before I even picked that up. And I had to kind of start from the beginning and catch up and make it by the end. So, you know, when it comes to those type of series, it's like, I don't like to submit to the hype, man. I don't mind being behind. But maybe that's just the way that I'm wired. I'm wired a little weird, as you may or may not know by listening to me over the course of the last year. By the way, this next week will be my 1 year Entercom anniversary. Don't know if I get a cake or not. We'll see how that works, especially in social distancing. I did want to talk about, just because, and we were talking about this on the Batter Up podcast, which you can download, by the way, via the radio.com app. I'm still kind of a little ticked off at baseball. And I heard Carl talking about this too, and even Randy on the midday show. They are going to need to, I don't know if it's, I don't even know how they do this, but there needs to be some sort of goodwill investment, goodwill, good faith investment toward me, the fan, when it comes to how they get me back. Whether it's, you know, and Randy used the term, you know, wine and dine me a little bit. To me, I'm soured by the greed that was displayed, number one. I don't have a lot of hope for baseball beyond next season, despite the optimism that was shown by Bob Nightingale last hour. And if you missed that, we'll replay it a little bit later on in the program. But I just, I'm not one of these people who lives under the delusion of grandeur that players and athletes care about the fans. That went out the window for me a long time ago. But when it comes to the responsibility, I talked about this too with Malcolm Jenkins, you had a responsibility to a lot more people beyond yourself when it comes to who you're serving and who your livelihood benefits. It benefits a lot of people, scouts, ticket takers. Heck, the minor leagues are basically defunct for a year. So because of that, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, man, do you realize how many people that your greed affected outside of you? But not only their greed affecting the people's livelihoods, but the one thing that I don't get from the owner's perspective is they get a real twisted way of way that they view the game, and they must not have access to the type of research that we in the radio business and those in the TV business have in terms of, number one, how their sport is consumed, and number two, who's actually doing the consuming. And a news flash to the folks who own baseball teams, don't whine to me about you not being able to afford these baseball teams and afford to run these baseball teams, because guess what? Nobody is caring about that, literally and figuratively, because the game has been in decline for years. And I say this as somebody whose first baby picture was in a baseball uniform. I've got shelves. I'm looking at them in my room inside our mobile Kia studios. I've got shelves dedicated to baseballs. I got a four-row display of autographed baseballs. And yet, that entire level and time of baseball is something that's a memory. It's not the present. The pageantry is dead. The get-back factor is dead. Baseball fans are older now than they ever have been in any realm of baseball's history. And why is that? Because of a failure to innovate, a failure to market, and this display of greed, which comes up about every 5 to 10 years, and the players got their butts handed to them in 2016 with the first with the last renegotiation. I get that. I'm sympathetic to that. And for the most part, I would say through 90% of this negotiation that they had with the owners, I was on their side. Until they actually told me, tell us when and where, what that actually means. Tell us when and where was they were daring the commissioner to impose a season so they could basically say, we're going to play, but we're also going to see you in court. And that's the kind of thing that turns me off. But not just that. Think about NASCAR for a second. And let's put to the side the Bubba Wallace stuff, because that stuff to me, you know, We can go 4 hours on that whole thing, and I'm not even going to blink an eye and bat an eye at that, because I'm nauseated by some of the comments and opinions that arise as a part of that discussion. But think about just from the way that they have marketed their sport since the pandemic began. They were one of the first products to put out a virtual component, put it on their national TV partners. It looked about as real as the actual races did. And it was faster than the actual races were. You had the race drivers themselves showing, for the first time in their existence, personality. And you didn't see the canned comments. Yeah, one guy ended up saying something really bad and very reprehensible and getting himself losing his ride. That was very unfortunate and shouldn't have been tolerated, and I'm glad it wasn't. But outside of that one grave example, you saw a benefit. You saw a league embracing innovation and embracing a potentially new fan base, so that when they returned to the track, they had already benefited from some sort of bedrock. And again, the racial components involved, I will say that they have done more to grow their sport in the last 2 to 3, 4 months than baseball has done in the last 20 years. And they've done more to grow their sport in the last 4 months than they have in, I think, their entire history, with the exception of the mid-2000s when they got the broadcast deal with Fox. I remember watching that first race on Fox. Yes, it was the unfortunate death of Dale Earnhardt, but that year I had broken my arm playing basketball. And I remember it very, very vividly. It was around Valentine's Day, Daytona 500. And I just remember, man, this is going to have a big impact on NASCAR, the fact that NASCAR is on broadcast TV. And because of that, they had a nice level of prosperity. Went away after some other decisions that were made. But getting back to the original premise, that is a part of the sporting landscape that Major League Baseball could have owned. You could have had them own the weekend. You could have had them own the weekdays. If you think about how long those discussions happened, take away the feasibility of whether they were able to play or not. We were in a situation where people were thinking about having them come back in June, middle part of June. Or starting games by the time they were on the 4th of July. Baseball would have been the only game in town of the major sports. And yet they messed that up. You could have had a situation like the MLS has now, where the MLS is going to have games at 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm not saying that baseball necessarily is going to do that. In fact, they actually said they're going to do the exact opposite. They're going to put all their games at night, which I think is a complete misunderstanding of the way that the whole market wants. If that was baseball, I'd be scattering games all over the place, especially if there's no fans. What's there to lose? But to me, I just look at this and I say, man, they just don't know how to market. And they have this built-in headspace thinking that says, oh, well, they'll come back. They'll come back. I don't know if they're going to come back, guys, especially what's on the horizon. And the dirty secret when it comes to baseball is that most of their money, and they basically telegraphed this to you, most of their money, or at least their usable money, their cash flow, is made basically on the first day of the season when those season ticket holders put in their deposit. Because they've got themselves in a point where people will say, you know what, I'll buy a Braves full season pass. I'll go to maybe 10 games a year, and I'll sell the rest and make money on the secondary ticket market. Now, you do have some people, diehards, who will fill out a Bob Carpenter scorebook and go to all 81 games. They live at the Battery. They do something else. Or they're retired. But guess what? Those aren't necessarily growing on trees. So their business model is broken without fans. They told that to you very, very candidly. I'm telling you right now, I don't know if those people are coming back. Now, I found it interesting what our colleague Mark Owens of Star 94 said about how they're trying to get something in the kitty with regards to entertaining people in the ballpark with or without fans from an entertainment standpoint between innings. So I found that part interesting. But the other part that I also find interesting, and this affects the Braves, this affects some of these other teams like the Cardinals, who have mixed-use development facilities that are owned by the team. It's not like when these games start at the end of July that the Battery is just going to be a ghost town. Not to put a full ad out for them, but there are going to be people there. So don't, and probably those bars will be full, and those restaurants will be full. That cigar bar that's out there, the Rocky Patel one, that'll be going. So because of that, don't sit here and tell me you're not going to be making money hand over fist, because those businesses pay a pretty penny to the Braves to be there. So that's the part of it that I look at and I say, don't cry foul over the fact that you're not making any money off of ticket sales. And up until this recent spike in coronavirus cases, you had some owners, including the ones in Texas and other warm weather states, that were saying, hey, you know, we maybe be able to put in, you know, 25 to 50% of fan bases inside our seats by the time this whole thing gets going on the 23rd, 24th of July. Now that's kind of put on hold. But they could have owned the space that we're in right now. They could have been playing right now. They could have been playing a week from now. But instead, they had to wait. It was because of their greed, their lack of foresight, and in my opinion, their misunderstanding of where they are in the sports landscape. They are third. They are a decided third now behind the NFL and the NBA. You could even say they might be even fourth if you count college football, which is not necessarily professional, but is looked at and treated like a professional entity by its TV partners. I'm not saying MLS can pass it by the gains that they could make during the COVID-19 pandemic, but I'm not saying it can't. 404-741-0929. We'll react to some of you on the Salmon Brothers Diamond text line and on Twitter at Willie P. Style. We'll come back. I asked a question on Twitter earlier this week because I saw some different comments about this particular issue, and I was surprised, astonished at the responses. What is that question? I'll tell you when I come back. Willie P. is in for John Chuckery on a Friday night, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P. is in a building in for John Chuckery tonight. Also via the radio.com app, where you can use the rewind feature. If you missed something like our interview with Bob Nightingale about an hour ago, you can go back and listen to that. Also, you can get anything from our shows on demand if you missed them earlier in the day, like Dukes and Bell's interview with Buster Olney. John had Nick Green on last night. He was fantastic. You can do that via radio.com. Just download it wherever you get your app store. I'm walking. I had ESPN on to watch the NBA schedule reveal, which, by the way, we told you earlier in the program, if you missed it, they will have to start out Pelicans, Utah, and then Lakers, Clippers as the doubleheader for that Thursday night opener on the 30th of July, yeah. TNT opening night set of games. So I had that on. And then I look back, and Angels in the Outfield is on. And I'm like, man, there's a threshold, like, there's a lot of, when it comes to, especially baseball movies, there's a lot of suspension of disbelief that has to take place when you're watching a sports movie. There are very, very few sports movies that represent the truism of life. There's always some sort of fantasy element, read Field of Dreams, if you will, or The Natural. And while those two seem plausible, for some reason I've always had the problem with the plausibility of Angels in the Outfield. For some reason, I can't get over Christopher Lloyd lifting up Matthew McConaughey to try and make that catch in center field. Like, I'm sorry. I can deal with hearing ghosts in a cornfield in Iowa, and I've been to the Field of Dreams in Dyersville, Iowa, and that's a fantastic place. I'd highly recommend going because it's great. Play catch. It's very serene and fun. And I could even get behind, you know, a silver bullet knocking out a guy like Roy Hobbs and him coming back to play baseball at age 50 or 60 or whatever the heck it was. But for some reason, I have a problem with a little kid talking to Danny Glover saying he can see angels. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about that movie. So I asked a question on Twitter earlier in the week, and this was after I'd seen a bunch of, you know, and if nothing else, the COVID-19 pandemic has enforced to me that if I did not need social media, I would not use it. If I didn't need it for my job to feel like I'm plugged in at what's going on, I would not use it. But I saw a lot of back and forth about, you know, I don't want to know when my team has a COVID-19 test, or I applaud the transparency of the fact that people are releasing COVID-19 positive tests. And so I just happened to ask, why not? Just because I'm out there. It was a couple days ago. I said, do you want your favorite team, college or pro, to make a positive COVID test public? And feel free to comment why or why not. 404-741-0929. And the Twitter response for a while, no, was a very prominent response, but it ended up kind of settling around 64-65% saying yes, they do, and no, we're about 35%. John says, I don't need to know. When the regular season starts, they'll have to report it anyway. People also talked about their fantasy lineup. Andrew says, doesn't matter to me, but who cares if they keep it private? The public has no right to know. And then there's others who say, you have a social responsibility to be transparent with fans about the realities they face. Otherwise, you get wild speculation. And then there was the person who said, oh, no, that feeds media fear porn. Don't want to get shut down over mild asymptomatic cases rising. And that just led me to, like the next person who says fear porn to me is like going to get kicked to Kingdom Come, because that is not what I center around. I try to take a measured look at everything, data. I am not an epidemiologist, so I'm not going to sit here and try to tell you what you need to do and not do. I'm just forwarding stuff from people who I follow who are smart when it comes to those things. I try not to get into the politicization of the whole issue too either, because that is not helpful for anybody. That's the whole thing that I don't get, is that you have some people who are saying, oh, well, this is a creation of other, like, no, that's not it. But the interesting wrinkle of this is when I saw my friend Dennis Dodd write an article the day after I ran the poll, when he said that college football teams have wrestled with the ethics of reporting positive coronavirus tests during game weeks. There's always been this little layer of gamesmanship that's existed in college football, and we know why in the NFL we have mandated injury reports. It's this little secret that the NFL doesn't really want you to know, but we've come to kind of figure it out. The NFL really likes when you gamble on their sport. They'll never admit it fully. Roger Goodell could be hit with truth serum and still lie through his teeth and say, you know what, I don't really think gambling presents our game in the best possible light. He'd say that out loud, but behind closed doors, believe you me, they're trying to figure out a way to monetize it when it gets inside stadiums, because they know they're going to have to embrace the dirty background and back layer that is gambling at some point when we get behind the pseudo hypocritical stance that people have when it comes to gambling. And I talked about this before the pandemic, about how most of the presidents inside our Atlanta sports scene seem to be in favor of it, and in favor on how to make money off of it if the law ever comes on the books. But that is why we have NFL injury reports, because of gambling. Not for safety, not to give the other team an advantage. It's so that you, the consumer, will know, hey, if this guy has a broken clavicle that he suffered midweek, that you don't put a dime on the Cowboys. So because of that, that's why we have it there. Yet in college football, we don't have that. And there's always been this kind of do they or don't they when it comes to injuries and reporting them. I dealt with a coach in my past. I'm not going to reveal the name, but I always kind of had the suspicion that he was intentionally obtuse when it came to revealing injury information about certain players, especially of those in great importance. And then it would be funny when we would go and check the bus coming over from the hotel, And we'd always kind of have to guess, you know, okay, this guy's not going to play, or this guy's in a splint, or, and we wouldn't know until hours before game time that a certain player was or was not going to be available, whether they were dressed out or not. There are others who were pretty matter of fact about it, because it's like, okay, you know, what does it matter whether a player, you find out about a player's injury now on a Tuesday when you meet the media, or, you know, Saturday morning before you take the field? Because you know what? They weren't insecure about their team. They were more believing in their program and their system. I always had a little bit more respect for those types of coaches. But you wonder how that extends to the coronavirus. Does a coach use that same gamesmanship when it comes to reporting about the Rona that he would say about a guy who tweaked an ankle? Because you can't spread a tweaked ankle to an opponent. Now, if somebody comes down with the virus, say, for example, it's an offensive lineman, who's to say that the members of that position group aren't also vulnerable? And should they not have the responsibility as a public service to the team they're playing, as a public service to the families of those who were involved with that particular team, to say, hey, look, I'm not even saying you say the person's name, because HIPAA laws keep you from saying certain things regarding that, but do they not have a particular responsibility to inform the public? There was one coach who was surveyed in Dennis's story who said if they weren't going to find out the COVID status of their opposition, they would refuse to play that team. So that to me is a very interesting ethical quandary that I think exists, and that I think college football coaches have to think really hard about. And I gave you the opposite polls. You have Kirby Smart, who at Georgia, it's well within his rights to say yes or no to do so, said, I'm not going to release who's testing positive and who's not testing positive. And same thing for other couple of SEC coaches. I think Will Muschamp at South Carolina said he wasn't going to. I think Saban said he would. And they have had a couple. And then you have Dabo Sweeney at Clemson on the other side, and their entire athletic department is releasing their particular COVID-19 testing results on a weekly basis. And they came out with theirs right before we went on the air. And since the start of June, they've had 37 of their 120 football players test positive. Now, that might be something that kind of turns your stomach. And that's kind of where a lot of people are with regards to the Corona-19 virus, or the COVID-19 virus, I should say, is that a lot of this is going to kind of test your stomach for comfort with regards to how do you go about feeling comfortable. And that's why I asked Bob Nightingale the question, and he didn't have an answer, but like, what is the number? What's the drop-dead number? How many people have to test positive before we have a real problem on our hands? And, you know, you have news items coming out here that saying 33 of 50 states have a rise in cases from where they were 2 weeks ago. So, in my mind, it's not just a random it's not a random fear. It's something that you'll have to look at on a week-by-week basis and kind of hold your breath and say your prayers every night to figure like, okay, everyone's doing their part. And the thing that at college is, I think, an even greater layer, and this is something we talked about even at the professional level with Buster Olney's comments regarding baseball, is that these kids are kind of on their own, the police themselves, and you wonder how that works at the collegiate level. You know, I've been up to Clemson. plenty of places where you could possibly get exposed to the coronavirus. I've been to Athens. Partied in Athens. Not exactly a shortage of places where you could go. No shortage of temptations. Heck, even, you know, where I sit, I live in Midtown. I could walk to 8 bars. I could get it. And it's all your own kind of individual equilibrium, and you have to kind of make that decision on your own. But make no mistake about it, it's something, if you look at it and you say, oh my goodness, my responsibilities are larger than my own safety. It's my family's safety. It's my team's safety. It's the people inside the building's safety. Will people think about that? I don't know. But I find it interesting to think that there are people who don't want to know, who just want to kind of, you know, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. 65% of those, though, surveyed, do actually want to know. 404-741-0929. That is the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line on Twitter at Willie P. Style. That's IEP Style. Coming up next, MLS is back 2 weeks from tomorrow for our Atlanta United. I want to talk more tactical nature when it comes to Jason Longshore instead of the feasibility aspects involving the coronavirus. What will we look like on the pitch? What kind of advantage do we have with the squad that we will field, especially with the guys we got back that we did not have when the coronavirus stopped play for us a couple months ago? Willie P with Jason Longshore next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.